Hello, welcome back to.
Planet Crime.
Hopefully, we're now back
For
for
good.
good. For
Yeah.
good. Meeks, you want to tell everyone what's been happening?
So, computer issues have now been sorted. I had some sort of issue with my computer. I don't know because I'm not tech savvy, but it's fixed, thank God. And we're back on it.
It was no fun doing it without you.
No, I can't imagine. I
It
can't.
was
Yeah.
so we decided earlier on that we're not going to really sort of talk about what we've been doing because that then sort of goes into the whole COVID-19 thing. And while it is a very big part of our lives at the minute, is, we don't want it, like I said previously, it'd be nice to have a COVID-free zone.
Right.
However, we know it's happening, and to ignore it would. So we wanted to try and strike a balance. So we thought what we would concentrate on is letting you know that we have some,
Extra content,
which
some
is really
bonus,
exciting.
yeah, some bonus bits and some extra like creepy, cool, crimey stuff.
It's
So,
exciting. And I think what it'll be really good for is like. What I said beforehand was when you've got 10 minutes,
yeah,
they're not going to be really long stories, are they?
not till.
So
I
be
would
really
say
good
about
to.
between 5 and 15 minutes.
Sure. Awesome. So we hope that this episode finds you safe,
Indeed.
well, and all your loved ones and you and yours are all okay.
And safe and happy and, well, as happy as can be.
So should we crack on?
Let's crack on.
Because I am so excited to tell you my case. We flipped a coin earlier and I'm going first. Da da da. Also, if you can hear snoring, that is our mascot Buster. That's my dog. I think he's getting a bit sort of over the fact that there are a lot of humans in my house at the moment. So I thought I'd bring him out here. And he's loving it. If
Aww.
my mum knew he was out here, she would go divvy.
She's probably
But
gonna find
this,
out.
well, she better find out because if she doesn't, that means that she's not been listening. If she's not been listening, me and her are gonna have words.
Yeah, I'm gonna have words. Come on, Judith.
I know. Come on, Jude. Hey, Jude. Anyway, so shall we crack the fuck on?
Let's crack the fuck on.
So, Meeks, are you ready?
I'm so excited.
Okay, get comfy.
I've been trying to bug you for the last week about what you're going to do, and you just haven't told me.
Okay, snuggle in.
Okay.
So, it was 1986, and Annie and Jessica Andrews were still understandably mourning the death of their mother, who had recently died of cancer. The girls desperately missed their mum, and out of pure teenage naivety, decided to perform a séance, knowing deep down that nothing would come of it. The sisters made their way to the basement. After some time had passed and Annie and Jessica were satisfied with their seance ritual, the girls went up to bed. While lying in the darkness, the sisters started asking the unseen force some questions. Then something unexpected happened. They got a reply. Rhythmic knocks. One, two, three. Annie and Jessica looked at each other in horror. What had they done? Jessica and Annie Andrews lived with their father in Townsend in Massachusetts. So the sisters enjoyed school, and it was said that they were really popular within their friendship circle. It was a typical day in the Andrews household when the phone rang. Annie answered but didn't recognise the voice at the end of the line. The person at the end of the phone said that he was a boy from the girls' school and that a mutual friend had given him their number. The sisters began to converse with the boy regularly, and he told Annie that he was a good-looking jock type, blonde, athletic, and well-educated. Annie had enjoyed talking with the boy a lot, and so when he asked her on a date, Annie didn't hesitate in saying yes. The boy's name was Danny, or Danny LaPlante, as we will find out. The day of Annie and Danny's date arrived, and Annie was really excited to meet the jock type she'd been talking to for several weeks. Except when Annie opened the door, she was shocked. This boy looked absolutely nothing like how he'd described on the phone. Instead, her blind date was a dishevelled, greasy-haired boy who smelt terrible.
Oh.
Being the polite, respectful young girl she was, Annie still let Danny take her to the local fair. But after just an hour, Annie made her excuses to leave. Daniel LaPlante was a troubled 16-year-old who was neglected by his mother and abused by several members of his family, including his own father. The teachers at school had an idea as to what was going on but couldn't prove it, so they sent Danny to the school psychologist, who, in a cruel twist, sexually abused him.
Wow.
Yay to the 80s, eh? Mm. 70s. Danny was said to be a loner with a few friends. This is when Danny embarks on his criminal career of breaking into homes. Not only does Daniel steal things, he also leaves things behind. Often things he's stolen from other people's houses. He also moves things around, in which case his motive behind these actions was chilling.
I think that would be more creepy to me if someone came into my house and moved things than it would be someone coming in and taking things.
He wanted to scare people and he wanted to play psychological games.
Mm.
It was 1986 and the knocking in the Andrews house had been going on for a few months. Things had started going missing and trinkets moving around. The girls were so concerned that they had summoned some sort of evil spirit that they went to their father and told him all about the seance that they'd performed. So remember, this is back before we had Google.
Mm-hmm.
And the naivety of 16, 17-year-old girls and boys was very apparent in those times. I think our children seem older now because they're more knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And they have more access.
I was just going to say more access to...
We have to shield them more, and that's getting harder and harder. So the girl's father put the girl's story down to just that it was a story, and it was the fact that they were still grieving terribly for their mother. It was now 1987, and one evening, while the girl's father was out, they began to hear knocks coming from the basement. Annie and her sister were terrified, but proceeded to grab two knives from the kitchen and head down to the basement. There, on the wall, read a message. I'm in your room. Come find me.
Shut the fuck up. What the fuck?
What's worse is it looked as if the message was written in blood.
Oh, no. I can't.
Terrified, the sisters ran to the neighbour's house, where the neighbours managed to get hold of the father. Remember, no mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
Their father, however, thought that this was a cry for help. And vowed to get the girl some therapy, which he did. Like, he saw it through and wasn't necessarily trying to brush it off, but at the same time, you know, put it down to the two girls missing their mum.
Wanted attention, right?
Yeah. So the knocks stop for a few weeks, but then they start up again. This time, the knocks were louder, harder. Then one day, the girls find another message. This time, it was in their bedroom. The message read, I'm back, come find me.
Shut up, I'm so done.
So again, the girls flee to the neighbours. This time, Annie and Jessica's father take them more seriously and goes to the house to investigate.
I'm not prepared.
He enters his home only to find that it had been what looked like ransacked. Ornaments were out of place, furniture had been moved, but yet nothing was missing. Mr. Andrews made his way through the house, finding more things out of place. And then he came to the girl's room. On the wall, read another message written in blood. It said, marry me.
What?
To his horror, when he looked around the room, he saw a figure standing there. The figure was wearing the deceased mother's dress and had makeup smeared across his face.
Ugh.
But that wasn't the worst thing. The figure was holding a machete.
What the fuck?
That figure was, of course, Danny. The girl's father tries to fight Daniel, but he gets away. When the police investigate, they search the whole house, but they can't find any signs of forced entry. Investigators were almost ready to give up searching in the Andrews house when a final search of the girl's bedroom revealed something terrifying. In the girl's closet, police discovered a small door. A small door that led to a crawl space. But this wasn't your run-of-the-mill crawl space. This was a space that led to a cavity in the walls, and this cavity was connected to the whole house, meaning not only that Daniel LaPlante was living in the walls of the Andrews house, he had access to roam the residence freely. It meant he could enter the house through the girl's bedroom when everyone was out and play his mind games by moving things about without ever being caught.
Fuck that. That is so weird.
So let's just stop a minute. Let's just think about this for a moment. A creepy, obsessive young man was living in the walls of this family's home.
Yeah, no.
And not only that, not only was he living in the walls of their home, he was playing psychological mind games.
Yeah.
With those two girls.
That's just fucking disgusting. And the fucking weirdest thing is that he was in their, like, deceased mum's fucking dress. Like, bitch, what? what the fuck?
Daniel was arrested and he was sentenced to a juvenile mental institution, but was let out, you got it, a year later. So after this, Daniel went back to his old ways of breaking into homes. In one of his more successful burglaries, Daniel got his hands on a pair of handguns. This would change the lives of the Gustavin family forever. It was now 1987, and the young, heavily pregnant mother of two, Priscilla Gustavin, was going about her usual daily routine. Her children, William 5 and Abigail 7, were playing nicely while her husband was at work. Suddenly, Priscilla was attacked from behind. Mr. Gustavin arrives home from work to a strange scene. For a home with two young children, it was eerily quiet. He called out to his wife, Priscilla, but got no reply. He made his way to his bedroom where he thought his wife might be taking a nap, seeing as she was heavily pregnant. This is where he made the heartbreaking discovery. Priscilla was lying face down on their bed with two gunshot wounds to the back of her head. Mr. Gustavin called 911 and explained that he found his wife murdered in their home but couldn't find his children.
Shit, I forgot about the children.
So they lived in a three-story home.
Mm.
Police raced to the horrid scene and started taking descriptions of the Gustavin children. However, another officer conducting a search of the scene found both children deceased. William and Abigail had been drowned in separate bathrooms. Two towns over, Daniel was committing another burglary and was holding a woman at gunpoint while he demanded that she drive him in a car. In an act of bravery, this woman makes a jump for it out of her moving car, and a passerby sees this and calls 911. Police recognise the description of the man driving the car as Daniel LaPlante. And he's finally caught 48 hours later after being found in a dumpster babbling to himself. In 1988, Daniel LaPlante is sentenced to three life sentences for the murders of the Gustavin family. Once in prison, Daniel is assessed by a psychologist who diagnosed him with a personality disorder and multiple personality disorder. Under the Supreme Court's ruling of sentencing juveniles, Daniel LaPlante became eligible for parole in 2014.
What the fuck?
Where he said he was really sorry for his actions. However, prison guards said that he never showed any remorse for his actions in the 24 years he'd been incarcerated. Daniel, fortunately, did not make parole, and he will spend the rest of his life in prison. And that is the insane, creepy story of Daniel LaPlante, the man that lives in your walls.
Oh, shut the fuck. I just can't. How? What? Where the fuck did you find this shit? Like, from a 16-year-old as well. Like, that kid must be fucking, like, deranged, I swear.
He, you should see him as an adult. I will, honestly, it's not good. Not good at all. And that poor Gustavin family, I mean, this guy had his whole family wiped out.
Yeah.
It's just, it's awful. Shocking. But the living in the walls thing, just...
Yeah, no.
That is what my nightmares consist of.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, how do you feel about that story? How did you like it?
All of my hairs on my body are stood up. Like, when you said you had a good case, I mean, like, what the fuck? I don't know.
You enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I don't know how mine's going to beat that. Mine's more like...
It's not competition.
You have to think about it. Whereas yours was just, yeah, I know. I know you're not a big fan of them because... Yeah.
What, thinking?
Yeah.
No, I do. I like thinking sharp.
No, that was crazy. Like, just when I thought it was bad enough, him living in the walls.
I know.
Like, then it went on.
But also, like, it just goes to show, like, back then, how, you know, we were just, as like, women especially, were told to be polite.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, if some dude showed up on your, when you were 17, some dude showed up on your doorstep that had been ringing you and completely was not what you, right now, I hope that every 17-year-old would be like, bye.
Bye, yeah, right.
Because if you lie about one thing, then you're going to be lying, you know, they're not, that's not a reliable person, is it?
It's not even just, like, the fact of, like, looking different. It's, like you said, it's the fact that, like, if he is going around saying that he is completely different to what he is, like, what else is he capable of?
Exactly. Like, and you just don't ever really know anybody.
Do you know what would ring alarm bells for me is, how the fuck has this kid got my number, for a start? Don't bullshit me.
Well, it was said that he'd stolen the phone number from someone else's house in another burglary. So, like, I'd got it out of the phone book and just, you know, made a random. Got lucky, you know, and also that he had tried to, like, burglarise the house.
Yeah.
As well. But, yeah, like, horrible, horrible human. I'm just going to send you these photos in a minute.
Okay.
Of when he did it, and then when he was up for parole, because, I mean, God.
God. Yeah, he looks strange.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no. That's awful.
No. Why don't you tell our listeners what you found, or what the electricians found?
Yeah, so...
Talking of things in walls. I tell you what, I think that's where I went searching for the story. After you told me what you're about to tell everyone. So, yeah, sorry, go.
That's all right. So, we had electricians in rewiring the house. And if anybody knows, I mean, I don't know, but apparently they need to go in the attic. And the two guys came downstairs and said to me, you do know we've just found a noose tied to one of your attic beams. Me being all, like, creepy, I'm like, oh, where? Let me see. Obviously, I didn't, but... Well, I really, really, really fucking enjoyed that.
Thank you. It's lovely to be recording, like, to be telling you again. It feels more natural.
Yeah, it definitely does. It feels like we were, like we're sat back in your kitchen again, but I'm sat on a very comfy chair and you're sat in a caravan.
I'm well comfy now.
This fucking chair, I need to get a new one if I'm going to be recording every week, because this is just ridiculous. Anyway, I am so excited to tell you mine, because I asked you maybe... 3 or 4 months ago, when we first started, like, planning the podcast, if you'd, like, ever looked into it, and you said no. So I'm hoping that you haven't come across it in the meantime.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you about Kennedy Family Curse.
Oh, this is really interesting because of what's recently just happened.
Right. So I thought this was really, really, really interesting.
Oh, how relevant.
Since 1941 to today, that family has either had a fucking curse or has just been completely unlucky.
Yeah, for sure. So, oh, what a great choice. Brilliant. Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, I'm snuggled in. I'm to listen.
So, as we all know, Kennedy family is, like, super well known. And if you don't know, John F. Kennedy was the United States president for a few years before, sadly, he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. But his brothers and, you know, sister, they've all been quite big in the political world.
Yeah.
So the trouble appeared to have started when the children of Joseph and Rose Kennedy were growing up.
Okay.
though there are so many tragedies. This is going to be like a bit of a different sort of set out, because I'm going to go as in, like, I'm going to start with 1941 and then say what happened then, and then I'm going to go 1944 and say what happened then.
Okay.
It's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit of a timeline.
I'm liking it.
You might get a bit confused with the names, but as I'm going through, I'll try and explain who each person is to sort of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1941, the third child, Rosemary Kennedy's brain, had been deprived of oxygen during birth, causing her to struggle to read and write. So she also struggled with mood swings, seizures, and violent outbursts. And in November of 1941, in a desperate attempt to cure or treat his daughter, Joseph Kennedy secretly arranged for her to undergo a prefrontal lobotomy. But then this was when it was like quite promising treatment for mental health.
Yes.
So instead of treating Rosemary, this procedure left her mentally and physically incapacitated, with the mental age of a toddler at the age of 23.
Aww.
Rosemary then remained institutionalized in segregation in Wisconsin until her death in 2005 at the age of 86. But that poor woman was left on her own in secret, sort of to the Kennedys, who were quite well known on TV and entertainment and political, you know. She was quite unknown to everyone. Nobody really knew that they'd had a disabled sister.
Yes, yeah.
So, oh, I forgot to mention, John F. Kennedy was one of nine. So big family.
Yeah, big, yeah. So, and they were big on family as well, weren't they?
Yeah, very family orientated.
Yeah.
So the oldest boy, Joseph, in 1944, volunteered to pilot a top secret and extremely dangerous World War II bombing mission in Nazi-occupied France, when two in-flight explosions rocked his aircraft. Joe and his co-pilot died. The cause of the explosions were never determined, and Joe was supposed to deliberately crash into a target via remote. So him and his crew were supposed to bail before the crash.
Yeah.
The explosives on board detonated too soon. But if it was 10 minutes later, he would have jumped out and been unharmed completely. So that was the plan, for him to sort of jump out, detonate, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And if it was just 10 minutes later, he would have been fine. Both him and his co-pilot both died. So in 1948, fourth child, Kathleen Kennedy, had married William Cavendish, who was England's Marquess of Harrington.
Yes.
She was flying to Paris to introduce her new husband to her father. However, at age 28, while flying just north of Ardèche Mountains, a storm caused Kathleen's plane to crash, killing her and her husband, as well as another crew member.
That's insane.
So on August 23rd, 1956, John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy gave birth to a baby girl who was stillborn.
Wow, I didn't know that.
In 1961, Joseph Kennedy Sr., who's the dad, became incapacitated by a severe stroke. This left him paralysed on his right side, and he also struggled with aphasia, which is which severely affected his ability to speak.
Aphasia is it can be temporary as well. I've had aphasia, and I get it quite regularly, and it's very odd.
Yeah,
you know what you want to say, and you can't say it, or someone is talking and you know that they're talking to you, but you don't necessarily know what they're saying.
That's interesting.
It's odd. Yeah. Anyway, as you were. Sorry.
No, that's all right. That's really strange. Well, that was in 1961.
Okay.
And in 1963, on August the 7th. John and Jackie Kennedy prematurely gave birth to a baby boy. They called him Patrick. Sadly, Patrick had an infant respiratory distress syndrome. So IRDS is a lung disorder that tends to affect premature infants.
Yeah.
Symptoms include difficulty breathing and collapsed lungs. Patrick passed away in Otis Air Force Base, Massachusetts, on the 9th, 2 days after he was born.
Oh my God, I didn't know that either.
The same year, in 1963, the most famous Kennedy tragedy happened on November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah.
When US President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. JFK was travelling through crowds in Lincoln Continental Convertible with his wife Jackie and Texas Governor John Connally when he was killed by a former Marine named Lee Harvey Oswald.
Have you seen those videos?
Yeah, they're horrific.
Oh, my God. sorry, as you were, it's just that replays in my mind over and over again.
Anytime you say JFK or John F. Kennedy, that's automatically what I think of. So the shots were fired from an upstairs window of the nearby Texas School Book Depository. 2 days later, JFK's assassinator was shot. He never stood trial, but he was said to have acted alone.
Okay.
So that was 1963. In 1964, on June 19th, US Senator Robert Kennedy survived a plane crash that killed one of his workers and the pilot. The small plane crashed in an apple orchard near Southampton, Massachusetts. The senator was pulled from the wreckage by a passenger and fellow senator. Kennedy spent 5 months in hospital recovering from a broken back, punctured lungs, broken ribs, and internal bleeding. Following the crash, Robert remarked to his clerk, "Somebody up there doesn't like us." So that was in 1964.
Yep.
1968, on June the 5th, following a speech at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, Robert Kennedy was shot several times by a gunman called Saran Saran. The shooting occurred in the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel. Robert was able to speak and asked if everybody was okay, but 26 hours later, Robert died of his wounds.
Oh my God.
In 1969, only a year later, on July 18th, after a party, Ted Kennedy accidentally drove his car off of a bridge in Chappaquiddick Island, Massachusetts, after losing control of his car, resulting in the drowning of 28-year-old passenger Mary Jo Kopench.
Good Lord.
Ted managed to break free from the car and swim ashore. Ted left the scene and reported the incident to the police 10 hours after it had happened.
Shit.
Kennedy pleaded guilty to a charge of leaving the scene of an accident, causing a person injury, and received a 2-month suspended jail sentence. Just a side note, if that was anybody else, they would have received a 10-year sentence.
Yeah, too true.
But following the incident, Kennedy publicly wondered about the existence of a curse, and he publicly said, and I quote, "All kinds of scrambled thoughts went through my mind, including questions such as, did some awful curse actually hang over all of the Kennedys?"
Mm.
So, 1973 now. On August 13th, Robert and Ethel Kennedy's son, Robert was the one who died in the Ambassador Hotel kitchen.
Yep.
Their son, Joseph P. Kennedy II, was driving on Nantucket when his Jeep overturned and crashed, fracturing brother David Kennedy's vertebrae, permanently paralysing David's girlfriend. The police cited Kennedy with reckless driving and the judge temporarily suspended his driver's licence.
Oh my God.
The Kennedys paid for Kelly's ongoing medical treatment through the years following the accident.
Bloody right.
That same year, at age 12, Ted and Joan Kennedy's son, Edward Jr., had his right leg surgically amputated as a result of bone cancer. In 1984, Robert's son, David Kennedy, the one that had the fractured vertebrae from the car accident, had flown down to Palm Beach, Florida for Easter, which several members of the Kennedy family had gathered. David checked into room 107 of the Brazilian Court Hotel and spent the next few days partying. On April 25th, staff went in to check on his welfare at the concern of family members. David was dead on the floor of his hotel suite. He died from drug overdose from cocaine, Meloril, and Demerol.
Oh my God.
In his hotel room.
Man, they're not having a lot of luck, are they? How many is that? Seven? Eight?
Yeah, of the family, yeah.
And then all the, like, you know, other people around them.
Right. Well, in 1991, on April 1st, William Kennedy Smith, who was the son of Jean Kennedy, one of John F. Kennedy's sisters, was arrested and charged with the rape of a young woman at the Kennedy estate in Florida. The incident began on the evening of March 29th, 1991, when William, then 30, was in a bar with his Uncle Ted and Cousin Patrick. There, William met Patricia Bowman, 29. William had asked for a ride back to a nearby house owned by the Kennedys. Bowman told police that that evening, William had violently raped her. At 4 a.m, she called two friends who received her from the Kennedy compound and first took them to her home, where Bowman called a rape crisis centre. She then reported the incident to the police and was given a rape kit examination. which documented sperm in her vagina and severe bruising was found. At trial, William had said that they had engaged in sex, but it was consensual. But three other women had testified that William had too sexually assaulted them.
Sheesh.
Their testimony was excluded on the grounds that the pattern of behaviour reported was not similar enough to the Bowman case. William was acquitted of all charges. Okay, so we're in 1997 now. On December 31st, Robert and Ethel's son, Michael, he was 39, was killed in a skiing accident in Aspen Mountain, Colorado.
God.
He was playing football while on skis with several other members of the Kennedy family when at approximately 4:15 p.m. he'd hit a tree. Kennedy was not wearing a safety helmet or any safety equipment. The family had been warned by the ski patrol to cease these activities. And following the incident, Kennedy was taken to Aspen Valley Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 5:50 p.m.
Oh my God.
1999, on July 16th, John F. Kennedy Jr. departed from Fairfield, New Jersey at the controls of his light aircraft. He was travelling with his wife, Carolyn, and sister-in-law, Lauren, to attend the wedding of his cousin, Rory. Kennedy had checked in with the control tower at Martha's Vineyard Airport, but the plane was reported missing after it failed to arrive on schedule. Officials were not hopeful about finding survivors after aircraft debris and a black suitcase belonging to Lauren was recovered from the Atlantic Ocean. Drivers found part of the shattered plane over a broad area of seabed, 120 feet, about 37 metres below the surface of the Atlantic Ocean. Three bodies were later recovered from the ocean floor by Navy divers. All three bodies were strapped to the aeroplane and were identified to be those of John F. Kennedy Jr., his wife Carolyn, and sister-in-law Lauren. It was determined that the crash was John's fault as he was just inexperienced and he died at age 38.
Oh my God.
2002. Cara Kennedy, daughter of Ted and Joan, was diagnosed with lung cancer at age 42. Initially, the disease was inoperable, but with her father's help, a surgeon at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston was willing to remove part of her right lung in an effort to save her life. The operation was successful and she resumed to an active life that included regular running and swimming. So, 2009. On August 25th, Ted Kennedy dies of brain cancer 15 months after his diagnosis. He died at age 77 in his home in Massachusetts. So, Cara Kennedy, Ted's daughter, suffered a fatal heart attack while exercising in Washington, D.C. She was 51 when she died.
God, that's young, eh?
Right. In 2012, on May 16th, Mary Richardson Kennedy, Robert Kennedy's estranged wife, was found dead at her home in Bedford, New York. Her death was ruled a suicide by hanging.
God.
In 2019, in August, Robert and Ethel Kennedy's granddaughter, Saoirse Kennedy Hill, died from an apparent drug overdose at the Kennedy compound in Massachusetts. She was just 18.
God.
So now we come to the last big issue in this year, 2020. On April 2nd, Robert Kennedy's granddaughter, Maeve Kennedy, and her 8-year-old son, Gideon, went missing when Gideon and Maeve were playing football and one of them kicked the ball into the water. They got into a canoe, simply intending just to retrieve the ball, and somehow got pushed into an open bay. This happened at the Chesapeake Bay. Maeve's body was found by divers on April 6th and Gideon's found on April 8th. And while we might not be able to say that there's actually a curse on the Kennedy family, this is just too weird.
Yeah, just it, like, honestly, what? And not to mention, what about all of the, you know, other people that died along, you know, pilots? What
yeah,
about,
exactly.
You know, the famous connection between your favourite girl, Marilyn?
Yeah.
And JFK. You know, like, that's weird, something weird went on, like, there. Her housekeeper definitely knows more. But that was all tied in with JFK.
Yeah, definitely.
I always think it's really sad about the daughter that had the lobotomy. I know it was a science of their time, but my God, like, they just turned her into a nothing.
I know.
And, yeah. Sad.
When you
did they say that she was probably autistic?
Probably, yeah. With like, mental health. I know mental health goes sort of hand in hand with autism.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, No, it's just awful. Like you said, I know it's the science of their time, but like, there's obviously a reason why they're still not allowed to do it.
So what do you think it is? Like, is it just, it's, see, my opinion is it is horrible, horrible coincidence, because I don't believe in curses. I don't believe in
No.
like witchcraft or anything. I just think that they are like, it's this horrible.
See, I think maybe, now this is like going quite far. I think maybe they probably thought they were invincible.
Okay.
That was, I think that's probably the closest thing that I would go to it. The pilots were super like inexperienced.
Yeah. It's like a
And
high risk lifestyle, basically. High risk than like you or I. We don't go in helicopters, and they are dangerous.
yeah, and I just think like, you know,
That's a
with the
good
skiing
point.
accident, they were told not
Yeah.
to do it and they continued to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you know, every family has at least one member of their family that has, you know, addiction issues. It's impossible not to, surely. You either know somebody, are close to somebody, are
Yep.
friends to somebody, or related to somebody that has had an issue with addiction. And it just happens
Yes.
that two of them were in this family, but it's a pretty big family, so you know.
Definitely. Oh, God. It's just, how many did you say it was in total?
I'm just counting up. One,
Okay.
fucking hell. 25 people dead. That's without the injury and, you know, the cancer, and that's without matey being a fucking rapist, whatever he is.
My God.
And that's with like obviously all the pilots and the people that died around them as well.
How many, yeah, good that you've included them, because they matter too.
Course.
Over how many years? Sorry to be like
That's okay. For, from
asking that.
41 till now. So
Over
79 years.
seven, yeah, over nearly 8 decades. God, still a lot though, isn't it?
Of the
But like you
same.
say, I think you make a really good point of pointing out that they lived a higher risk lifestyle
Yeah.
in terms of, like, you know, like you say, they went skiing and they were told not to. They inexperienced had it. It's more likely to happen to them than it is to us, because I
Yeah,
don't do those things,
no,
and not
thank you.
because of that, but because I just don't have the opportunity to or means to do
Right,
so.
money as well, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I there's no way I'd be able to afford a canoe for a start.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in those sort of decades, people that had money took drugs.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't so much begging on the street for money for drugs. It was more, if you had the money, then you're buying drugs. Like, why
Well,
not?
that elite, you know, it's no different to now.
No.
Like the elite, you know, the drugs isn't, they aren't indiscriminate. It's just they have more means to access the drugs, and I expect because they think that they're taking them in certain environments that, you know, they're not skanky drug people.
Right.
And I don't mean that to sound like a derogative term, but that's,
No,
you
I
know,
know what you
their view and their excuse and their validation. I just, you know, it's a crock.
mean. Yeah. I don't know. I just thought that was super interesting, like how.
Really, really interesting, and a really good one to come back in on. I think,
Yeah.
like that was really, you had me glued.
Good.
It was really good, and it's so nice to be back with you.
I know. It feels so good to actually be able to, like, although I could still write content, I couldn't type it and I couldn't do as thorough research.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
it's nice to be able to research again. It's nice to be able to come on and actually, you know, like you said before, we bounce off each other.
And it's nice to make use of this time.
Yeah, definitely.
So, do you want to have, do you want to go into a bit more detail? Do you want to, like, should we talk about our trailer to listen
Yeah.
out for the trailer?
Because of this crazy time at the moment, and like we both said, we don't want to go into it. We just
Yeah.
wanted to put out some extra content to keep you guys, you know, sane. Because
And
podcasts,
us.
yeah, exactly. Podcasts keep me sane as well as I know they do you.
Yeah, for sure.
So we've decided to narrate some true and not true, like creepy stories.
Yeah.
So there'll be some that are like real accounts from people. There'll be some that are like sci-fi and weird, and we thought about doing 2 a week so that you have some short clips, like Lauren said the other day, just for you to be able to put your headphones in for 10 minutes and, you know, zone out of the world a little bit.
Zone out to your murdery murder.
Yeah. I've tried to keep like the majority of it sort of along the lines of like criminally insane, crime, murder, kidnap, that sort of thing. But sometimes I will go off on a little tangent a little bit, and I'll maybe do some weird stories and like I said, sci-fi stories. And we might do some, you know, something that isn't crime, just for those that aren't massive crimeys. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm also really interested and would be really happy to narrate any of our listeners' stories, either if it's a suggestion, one that you've seen on a website or your own. Please write, you know, send them to us at
planetcrimepodcast@mail.com.
brilliant. So yeah,
email them over and we'll definitely try and narrate them for you.
DM them on Instagram.
Yeah, definitely.
Or Planet Crime Podcast.
Yeah, send us a link over to, you know, your stories if you submit them to Reddit or anything like that. Give us a shout and yeah, we'd definitely be happy to narrate your stories.
We'd love that. Okay, so sure. So until next crime.